When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, so we'll start it with some portal stuff. So Hank and I just put in some crystal ball predictions for Bill Norton.
He's Big Bill,
grad transfer D lineman from Arizona.
No, you're good.
The Arizona transfer or graduate transfer D lineman also spent the first 4 years of his career actually at Georgia. Hails from Memphis originally, went to Christian Brothers High School in the Memphis area. Our own Hank South at Horns 24/7 actually tripped out to Memphis whenever Mr. Norton was in high school. That's how long Hank's been around. So, and I mean, it kind of tells you the prospect too, that Norton, I guess, originally was and still is, you know. If Hank South is coming and driving from Austin, Texas to Memphis, that means you were a pretty big target for Nick Saban and company back in the day, which should be good news for any Texas fans interested in this.
He was a top 100 kid in the country. Bill Norton was.
Yeah, he was actually ranked exactly number 100 by 24/7 in the 2019 top 247. So. Mm-hmm. Brings a lot of experience potentially to the Texas D-line room after, you know, they lose statistically the two most productive defensive tackles in college football this past season. So it could be a great add. As of right now, the only school we know that he has a visit set up with is Texas. I believe he's actually in Austin already, though that's not 100% confirmed. To be completely honest with you, this story's been written for several days. Hank and I always be careful, or we always try to be careful with our crystal ball predictions. You know, we don't want to be too conservative with it, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to be too, trying to jump the gun, I guess. So, we wanted to wait a little, before we put these in for Norton. And that's what we did, but we feel great about our predictions, feel great about, Texas getting this done this weekend. And, he's a grad transfer too, so he does have the option to kind of extend his portal recruitment. He could add other visits, and he doesn't necessarily have to have a decision made by the time the portal closes, which I believe is April 30th. Per 24/7 Sports' Matt Zenitz, Texas offensive tackle transfer Peyton Kirkland is expected to visit Colorado this weekend. That's breaking news, by the way.
So. Is there a program that's been more vocal about their offensive line needs than Colorado?
No. I'm not really laughing because of that. I'm just like, you couldn't write it better. He makes a top five that doesn't include the school he ends up committing to and spending a year at, but he commits to and spends a year at that school anyway, and then now looks like Colorado with Coach Prime is most likely option. I mean, if you're getting surprised by anything in 2024, that's your fault. So,
and we figured, we talked about it the other day with Peyton Kirkland. Was like, hey, man, UCF makes a lot of sense. You can go back home, stay in the Big 12. A lot of places made sense for Peyton Kirkland. I didn't necessarily think going to Colorado was his next port of call, but hey, here we are.
Yeah. So, that was interesting, but. But I guess back to Norton, you know, Johnny Nansen is kind of, I don't want to say flexed his muscles, but I mean, he already kind of flexed his muscles with getting Tio Savea, you know, committed in the boat in the first portal window. And then now, you know, we like the changes of him landing another Arizona player. And the other guy I want to talk about for the portal, apologies if I mess up his name, but Jay Tawai from UCLA. Was originally in my class, the 2021 class, early enrolled at USC and ended up portaling to UCLA that May. So only spent about 4 or 5 months at USC before he transferred across town to UCLA, and that's where he's been the past three seasons. So With him, he entered a couple days ago. He's not necessarily a humongous name. I wouldn't say, you know, to be honest, there's really many humongous names right now in this current portal window. But, you know, he's one of the more coveted guys. And with that being said, he's actually at Texas right now and is on a visit. He's on a visit this weekend for the spring game. We actually got word from sources this morning, but we're explicitly told to hold on to it, not to report it. And so we're given the green light. But unfortunately, I don't know if it was the same setup at another site. Another site posted the story, so now I'm able to talk about it. But yeah, Jade Tawai's on campus. If Hank hasn't gotten that up on our side, it'll be up any minute. We already had a story written and everything. So, again, you know, wish we could, waited a little longer to keep sources happy. But, you know, if someone else is going to run it, we're going to run it as well.
Such as life.
And on the same note, as soon as I get off this show, I'm going to go write another crystal ball in the story for Texas to land Jade Tawai. So really like the chances there. He's also actually a former Johnny Nansen player, as Johnny mm-hmm. Nansen was at Arizona for 2 years as defensive coordinator. Prior to that, he was at UCLA as the defensive line coach. So was actually who recruited Tawai out of the portal already, considering, you know, he went from USC to UCLA. So both these guys have some familiarity with Nansen. Obviously, one spent one season with him, one spent two seasons with him. And it's important for Norton, especially because even though he spent 4 years at Georgia and was a contributor, I wouldn't necessarily call him a major contributor. He had his best season in Arizona. And a big part of him with Texas being such an attractive opportunity for him outside of, you know, all the normal things we usually talk about that make Texas an attractive opportunity to prospects and especially players in the portal. The guy that brought him his best success he's ever had in his football career is offering to coach him again. While maybe at a different position, obviously he's co-DC linebackers coach now, he still likes some familiarity. And there's also an NFL D-line coach who's now coaching in Austin as well. So,
yeah.
A lot of things to like about Texas's chances for both of those guys, but
can I say something about Bill Norton real quick, Jordan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just looking at his PFF numbers, not a big pass rush guy. You're not taking him to be a pass rusher. He had on the season 208 snaps as a pass rusher, only 11 total pressures, which is not. I mean, it is what it is. You're taking him as a run defender. I mean, on one of the best defenses in the country, he was a top 10 graded run defender last year. One of the stats I love that PFF, because you can get, look, tackles can be a really misleading number. You know, like if you got 120 tackles, but they're all 8 yards down the field, then you just racked up a bunch of tackles on a bad defense. But Bill Norton had 18 tackles, according to Pro Football Focus. 16 of those were stops, which results in a failure for the offense. That means it's either a tackle for loss, stop, or stop for no gain. You're getting the offense off schedule. So damn near every time he's making a tackle in on run defense, it's either a tackle for loss or it's no gain. So that's a guy that's having an impact. So at this point, Tia Savea is going to be a guy that's going to be a little more versatile, can play a few more shades. And you saw him, George. Savea's a little leaner, probably close to the 295 to 300 range as opposed to like the 320 to 330 guy. And Bill Norton, there's no question he's going to come in and be a guy that you put in the A gaps and B gaps. As a matter of fact, I was looking at his snap counts from last year. He only had, as far as his alignment goes, he had played 198 snaps in the A gap, 193 snaps in the B gap, two snaps over offensive tackles, and one snap as an outside shade, basically as a seven technique or wider. So he's definitely going to be an interior guy, run stuffer. And again, man, in the SEC, dude, it's just about volume of bodies. Can you just keeping your best guys fresh? And that's, to me, you know, when you get into some of these games, and we know there's going to be close games in that league this year, right? We're talking about Georgia, you know, Florida's got athletes that are similar to yours, A&M, you know, just going on the road and playing Arkansas. You're going to have games where they're second half games, and you just want Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton to be as fresh as possible. The way you do that is with good depth behind those guys.
Yeah. And I mean, with Norton, I don't know why, but on his 24/7 sports profile, he's listed at like 270 or 275. The dude is 6'6 and 1,000% three bills. He's listed at 325 on Arizona's roster from last year. Feel pretty strongly he's around the same weight and is not in the 200s. So, you know, if you can go out and get a 23, 24-year-old guy who spent 4 years with the D lineman at Georgia and then a year at Arizona where, you know, Arizona kind of rose to the top of Pac-12 almost overnight. Mm-hmm. Similar to kind of how Texas did last year, you know, like this is a great potential addition for Texas. I know fans and readers are going to see the stars and not jump off the page like, yeah, well, this guy might not get drafted after potentially one season at Texas. He can still help Texas a ton. And like the same thing will probably be said about Jay Tawai and how he's only a 3-star in the transfer portal or whatnot. But I mean, like, there's so much value in depth, and I've said it before earlier this spring on the show, but like depth is not being talked about enough with this upcoming season, because there's now 12 teams in the playoffs. If you're going to be seeded between 9 and 12, you're going to have to play what, like 15, 16 games? Like that, yeah. That's essentially unheard of before this season. Like we're going to see the top tier programs dealing with more injuries they've ever dealt with. And it's because they're playing more games than they've ever played. And like, with that being said, if you want to be able to compete against a Georgia and an Alabama or whatnot in the playoffs, you got to be able to go 6-7 deep sometimes, because you know damn well they can. So, yeah, you know, again, I know everyone isn't going to be in love with the rankings and ratings of these guys that we have for them in the portal, but like, at the end of the day, like, depth is the most important thing. And whenever you have depth with players that actually have years of playing experience and they're not just freshmen or sophomores, it makes a monumental difference, especially when it's a guy that comes. I know he's coming from what was the Pac-12, but he's really an SEC cat. He spent 4 years in the SEC with Georgia, so that's how I view him. So, again, I would love this ad for Texas. I would love the ad at Hawaii for Texas as well. You know, I always said I think they're going to get at least one D lineman, but truly felt like the need, it needed to be at least two.
Yeah.
Where we're at right now, seems like those are going to be the two. Dominic Williams is obviously still coming in. He's got a visit scheduled as well. But as of right now, it's looking like those are the two most likely. I could see them going up to three, even as many as four if it's the right guys. But, you know, Texas is like a lot of other schools that only need D linemen. And, you know, I've talked enough about it already. Great D linemen right now are very scarce on the portal, so these guys are going to have a high number. And,
yeah,
you know, whenever you need potentially 3-4 of the same type of position and all of them, you're going to have to, you know, pay more than what they're actually worth. It's going to be interesting to see how far Texas is willing to go with not necessarily fundraising, but just NIL spending in the portal, because – you know, you put these guys in the December portal, they're not going to be earning as much. It's just a fact. So really curious to see kind of what Texas decides here with the rest of the guys on the board. Because, I mean, at the defensive line position in the transfer portal, especially in the April transfer portal window where a lot of these teams are in win now mode, it gets like the Wild West with some of these numbers. So, again, Texas usually very level-headed with how they go about things with NIL on the portal, but really, really interested to see how they kind of handle these next few weeks. So,
by the way, the correct pronunciation, To'iha.
To'iha, got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Appreciate it. Apologies, Jay. But I just want Nanson to make Jackson Arnold see ghosts again. Yeah, well, Colton Vosick and Ethan Burke also made him see ghosts December of 2021. So,
yeah, man, that's
I think they sacked him 11 times that night. Like, I'm almost positive they set a state record or something for most sacks in the 6A game. They sacked him at least 10 times. I know that for a fact.
Man, if I'm an OU fan, that makes me nervous. Just turning it over to Jackson Arnold, because you don't know until you know. And did you see enough in the Alamo Bowl to feel like, okay, this is the guy that's going to go win you 10, 11 games next year? I know he's talented as hell. We ranked him high for a reason. Everybody rated him high for a reason. But, man, I think now, especially in the portal, you've got to be as sure as possible that that's your guy. Now you're turning it over. You got a new offensive coordinator. Man, I don't know. I'll tell you. I'm nervous as hell.
I'll tell you what. Not an OU fan by any means, but I'm not nervous for Jackson Arnold or for Oklahoma. So Jackson was it felt, at least from my point of view, like it was always going to be OU, even before, you know, he went public with it. But this is kind of bad, but like I really wanted to not, I guess, find a way to root against him, but like I wanted to kind of figure him out. I'm like, okay, this kid's going to OU. He kind of gives off Baker vibes. I spent more time around Baker in random parts of like Travis community than most other people have. So kind of gave me some Baker vibes. So I'm like, you know, let me figure this dude out. And I actually, you know, I really liked him. Great kid, amazing kid, and a great player too. I saw him play a lot his junior and senior year. And I know y'all probably not loving the love I'm showing OU's quarterback of the future, but Jackson Arnold is by far and away, it's not even remotely close, by far and away the best high school quarterback prospect the Venables staff has signed. And like Michael Hawkins, even the transfer guys.
Was Nick Evans Evers Berry. A signee or did he transfer in?
Nick Evers is a signee, but like, and no one in Dallas is surprised by kind of the path that's happened for Evers.
I saw that he transferred to Wisconsin and now he's back in the portal.
Jackson Arnold, I'm as someone who covers Texas, like that is one of the players on Oklahoma's roster I'm most worried about for Texas going in the future, just because like I've seen him at his highs, I've seen him at his lows. I feel very confident he's an NFL quarterback. I think there's going to be some growing pains. Trust me.
Oh yeah.
I think there will be. And Texas is going to do what they can to limit him. But I'm telling you right now, Jackson Arnold will, if people are kind of looking at him, like, I don't know about this guy. I feel pretty strongly he's going to surprise some people this season.
Texas OU game, you know, when one team has an experienced starter and the other team doesn't, typically that favors the team with the experienced starter. Last year was one of the exceptions because Quinn had started that game and started the 49-0 game and played really well. But Dylan Gabriel's not your normal first-time starter. It's a dude who's played a lot of snaps. But I think, like, this year's game, you're talking about Jackson Arnold, a dude that's never been in that environment before, between the chalk lines, against Quinn, who this will be his third. That's advantage Texas all day, every day. For the first time in a long time in this game, you look at the coaching matchup and you're like, man, you might take the guy on the Texas sideline over the guy on the Oklahoma sideline. I'm talking about just being as neutral as I can. Like, who would you rather trust on game day, Sark or Venables? Now, we saw the first year, Sark whooped Venables like he stole something. I thought the game came down to Venables and Jeff Lebby made a couple of really key adjustments. Venables defensively early in the game, when they picked off that pass, did just a really good job of studying film. And Lebby, when he basically turned Dylan Gabriel into a runner and told him, hey, man, don't hang back in the pocket. If you're dropping back and you see nothing but 20 yards of grass in front of you, just pull the ball down and go. It's not like they were even calling quarterback draws. He's just telling them, hey, dude, just tuck it and go. You're going to be our best offense right now. So I thought I could say they out-coached. They won the chess match last year. But, go ahead.
Another thing about Jackson Arnold is, like, a sneaky athlete. Like, looks just like a white kid pocket passer, but, like, he can take off on your ass. That's another thing that he kind of – or the Oklahoma kind of returns. I wouldn't classify Dylan Gabriel as a true dual threat. I wouldn't do the same for Jackson Arnold either. But Jackson Arnold can definitely use his legs and escape. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, I doubt he's doing it in college still, but in high school he used to, like, run – people over and lower his shoulder. He wasn't scared of contact. Yeah, so.
You trust me, you get your bell rung the first time in college, you learn to be a smart runner real quick. Antoine, hang tight. I want to get to your point.
Yeah.
Would you like a fun fact about Jay Tawai, Jordan?
Let's hear it.
His older brother, he's got two older brothers.
One of them's Jose State.
Yeah, at San Jose State. His oldest brother, though, about former Baylor defensive lineman Siaki Ika is his older brother.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
And Jake Hawaii actually grew up in Tonga and played rugby as a youth. So there you go, a little Jake Hawaii fun fact.
Yeah, so Jose, the question I got up on the screen right now, honestly, it's kind of really hard to tell you because Texas has never really landed under the Sark staff.
They haven't had.
Yeah, they haven't landed like a top-tier high school D lineman. They just haven't. So, like, I really couldn't tell you what the true market is for them.
Are we not to assume that Trill Carter got, like, $100,000 or something? I don't know what Trill got, but I don't think it was top-of-the-market money.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because, like, Isaiah Bond and Matthew Golden and Silas Bolden, all three have different numbers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sadir Mitchell, I wouldn't classify him as like a top tier. When I hear top tier, I think of like top 100 bona fide guys.
That's
Texas,
like
Texas. Bo Davis never signed that. Kenny Baker hasn't gotten a commitment from one of those guys yet. Lance Jackson kind of counts, but he's an edge listed as a D lineman.
Even Bo's first run at Texas, I mean, the two best defensive tackles he signed were Malcolm Brown and Hassan Ridgeway. Hassan Ridgeway really wasn't his recruit. I mean, Will Muschamp did all the legwork on Hassan Ridgeway's recruitment, and then basically Bruce Chambers got it across the finish line. And Oscar Giles did pretty much all the legwork on Malcolm Brown's recruitment. And you're talking about spring game commitments. That's one that I remember. I remember being in the stands at the spring game and running our stories that Malcolm Brown had just committed because they got a commitment from Tim Cole. So it was kind of a package deal getting Malcolm Brown and Tim Cole from Brenham. But that was – I don't want to discredit Bo Davis's recruiting efforts on that deal because he was on the staff. But that was – I mean, the couple times I went to Brenham, Jordan, during evaluation periods – Oscar Giles was either there or like had just been there or was coming there the next day.
Yeah. And also, I guess to revisit this question, there really is. I mean, one, I have numbers of the fair majority of the Texas roster, but I don't have numbers for everyone. But like there really isn't a ton of like pure science or like a pure formula to how these players get to these numbers. Like every scenario is different. Some people have agents that are helping them negotiate. Some people are where it's dead ass, just the kid talking to the collective and that's it. Some will be a mom or dad, an uncle, cousin, whatnot. Like everyone's situation is different. But the reason I always talk about like NIL, it's going to cost more in the portal is because you're not, one, you don't have to develop the kid as much and spend years working with him to create that type of player. And they're already proven as someone who's produced in X conference or whatnot. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why they get paid more. But like portal numbers are usually a lot harder to find out than high school numbers.
So, right. Let's look at that from this standpoint. What do you think the difference is between what Walter Nolan got from NIL money to go to A&M out of high school, and then the difference between what he got paid at Ole Miss? And I know he's at the top of the food chain, but like, what's the difference there?
I don't know, because I never found out his numbers for either school, but like, I'd say I out of high school as a number two prospect in the nation behind Travis Hunter, he had to have been at least in the 500s, 600s. Easy. Yeah. Easy. And especially with what A&M was doing that year, I wouldn't be surprised if he started in the 700s.
Jose does bring up a good point. Like if your collectives are basically your, for all intents and purposes, they're your salary cap managers. Do you go for more, like especially defensive tackle? Do you go for more money for a high school recruit or for a portal recruit? I think you got to roll the dice. If it's an elite guy, if it's a top line guy, like let's go backtrack a decade, right? Like Texas is recruiting Malcolm Brown, a 5-star defensive tackle in the portal era. I probably go get his NIL money up front and pay for it up front. Because like you said, if if good defensive, top-tier defensive tackles pop up in the portal, they don't very often, but when they do, it's gonna cost you much, much more in terms of NIL money. Your collective is gonna have to work that much harder to get that guy, you know.
Yeah, and I out of high school, the only guys who are consistently getting offers for seven figures a year are the top tier quarterbacks. Like, probably, I'd say the guys who are making more than an M their first year is probably the top 5 to 8 QBs in the class.
Yeah.
After that, I'd say it's no one. For Walter, for example, you know, I said he's probably 500, 600, 700 his first year at A&M. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss, I'd say he's probably in the 900 somewhere. I'd assume they try to offer 200 more, because I know A&M was being pretty aggressive to get him to stay.
Yeah.
So on the same note, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Walter Nolan is one of, like, probably 20, 30 players that is getting $1 million or more guaranteed through the collective, and that's not including marketing money. So,
makes sense, because as a high school recruit, like you said, some people have agents, and then people have a good idea of kind of what the ballpark is. Mm-hmm. But when that prospect, if he goes into the portal and he's just leaving for change of scenery, like, he's been a productive player, nothing's changed with his talent level or his NFL trajectory. Okay, now you know what the floor is, and he can basically name his price from there. So, like I said, it's going to cost you a few $100,000 more to get that top tier guy in the portal as opposed to it. Man, I think it goes back to, you look at the programs. We're talking about Jay Tawai. Man, you look at a program like UCLA. I don't know what UCLA's collective setup is, but they have put so much emphasis on the portal. Now, you can put too much emphasis on portal guys, because you're not supposed to. It's very hard. I'm not gonna say it's impossible, because my alma mater did it.
Look how it worked.
It's extremely hard to just completely rely on the portal and try to reload and build a roster that can win a decent number of football games, get you competitive. It's got to be through grassroots high school recruiting. That's the way it always is. It's got to be that way.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say their names, but, like, I'm looking at the top 8 ranked early enrollees from the 2024 class currently on campus right now. One of them is getting 350 his first year. One of them is getting 400 his first year. One of them is getting 450 his first year. Each of them have it staggered where it's going to go up 50 to 75 per year there in Austin, because, you know, that obviously incentivizes people to stay. Damn, no, that giveaway who it is. Never mind.
Yeah, you're good.
I was just going to say, like, one of those guys was very strategic with how he went about his process of the NIL.
Strategery.
The other one, and he did that without assistance of an agent. Another one had an agent, and then the other one was kind of – I felt he was going to Texas no matter what, and that just really sealed the deal. But he didn't have an agent either. So one of those guys had an agent, one of them didn't. So that, I guess, kind of a look into what it looks like for the freshman.
So Jose's next point, we're going to talk about spring game, but to Jose's next point, let the UTSAs and Houstons of the world develop, guys. It's funny. I don't know if you saw this, Jordan, but I heard Zenitz might have tweeted it, or maybe Marcelo. I forget. Somebody in our network tweeted it. But there's G5 schools that are trying to not have their spring games streamed, or don't want any, you know, film out of it, because they don't want the P5s, the power conference schools, breaking down their spring game film, basically using it as, like, amateur scouting, getting ready for whenever the next portal window opens.
Yeah. So
that's a new one, man.
Yeah. So this is true, CB, and it's because of exactly what you said. And also, I think the 4-year red shirt or 4-game red shirt also, I think, helped that, as well as the COVID year and other things. But But yeah, no, the least favorite thing for a G5 head football coach nowadays is an all conference list. right. Because it comes out prior to the start of bowl season and prior to the start of the portal opening. And it's just like, yeah, here's a watch list for the best players for you to go poach in a conference. Yeah. Like, that's literally what it is. So yeah. And I guess to answer this, with what Jeff was saying about Texas State using the portal, I'm blanking on his name, whoever the head coach was.
Spavital?
Baylor OC. Yeah, Spav.
Spavital, yeah.
Spav literally, like, would only take, like, three high school kids, and the rest were portal. Like, you just can't do that for that many years in a row. The reason it's working for G.J. Kinney is because he just went back to his UIW roster and plucked the best players and then used that to kickstart his first year at Texas State. Yeah. He also went and got T.J. Finley as well, which, you know, helped a lot. That's the most important position in football. Yeah. But, yeah, I think the best way to do it is kind of how Kinney did, where you just go and pluck the best players from wherever you were. Obviously, morally, probably not the best thing to do, but, you know, we want to win football games, so man, we don't care about morals. So
at this point, that stuff's out the window, man. You know, but, you know, you saw Kalen DeBoer do that a little bit. He brought some guys from UW. Maybe Parker Brailsford at center was, you know, part of that O-line that won the Joe Moore Award. He transferred to Bama. You know, Jed Fish got a couple of guys to go with them from Arizona to Washington. He even took a couple high school recruits. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're just – that's the way to do it. And it's understandable, right? Like, your first couple of years, maybe your first year, hopefully just your first year, maybe your second year, you're going to have to load up on portal guys, take more portal guys than you probably like just because you need depth, you need bodies. We saw that with Sark in a 21 class. I mean, dude, I respect the hell out of all those guys for their efforts, right? All those guys, you know, in that first class. I'm not talking about the second class with the Jai Hall and Jaleel Billingsley, but, like – you know, Ray Thornton, Ovia Gofu, Ben Davis, Darian Dunn, like those guys. Darian Dunn was a Tom Herman signee, but that's beside the point. Those guys gave their max effort. You know, you appreciate their efforts, but dude, there's no way in this portal cycle, Texas doesn't take any of those guys because they wouldn't have needed to.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, but that leads me to Antoine's question. You'll see some of these guys this year. It's up here, Jordan, probably about hold on, let me see if I can find it. Yeah, go to the in the chat. It's going to be at the 11:27 a.m. mark. Antoine's question. So Antoine asked, do we agree that most recent transfers don't produce at UT? I think if you really broke it down, it's probably about 50-50, because Antoine names like Tariq Milton, who we talked about. Tariq Milton, he was an insurance policy for Jordan Whittington, and I never heard about Tariq Milton being a problem, finished his eligibility. And if Texas had won that game in Lubbock, we'd be talking about that Hudson Card to Tariq Milton pass as being like the play of the game that got
him. Man, I remember watching that game and being like, who just caught that? Is that Tariq Milton? And just being like, why is he in the game?
Because you remember, because X got hurt.
I completely forgot about
that. X got hurt. He hurt something shoulder. I forgot. He had some kind of injury, but yeah. And they had a couple injuries, and it's like, oh man, Tariq Milton's playing high leverage snaps all of a sudden.
Yeah. Was that the game that Bijan did the scorpion thing, or was that?
No, that was the 2020 game was when he did the scorpion thing. Okay. The 22 game was when he had the fumble on the first play overtime.
Yeah.
And at that point, because I was down on that end of the field at like the 25, watching it, and as soon as he fumbled and they said it was Tex ball, I felt a water bottle buzz by my head, and I'm like, I'm going to the tunnel. I want no part of what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. So I just went, and then probably on my way, like the three other water bottles buzzed by me, and I'm like, I'm getting the hell out of here. Want no part of this celebration. But so Antoine is Tariq Milton, the Jai Hall, Jaleel Billingsley, Ray Thornton, Ovia Gofu, Ben Davis, Darian Dunn. Like I said, some of those guys were those first-year guys that Sark just needed to fill out the roster, just needed numbers. But I think you start looking at that second guy. From that first wave, you know, there's a reason why Keelan Robinson, when we did our transfer portal rankings, I think we did a top 240s, 247 of transfer portal guys. Keelan Robinson was the only one that was ranked. No, none of those other guys were ranked. And we saw why. Keelan Robinson ended up being a pretty productive player. But, you know, that second year, you had Billingsley, you had a Jai Hall. You also had Quinn. You also had Ryan Watts. So it balances out, man. I think over time it evens out. But, man, there's no question you look at the quality. And you know what, too? I'll give the Tom Herman staff credit, man. Brandon Schooler was a portal guy that ended up playing on both sides of the ball, played productive snaps for Texas, and he's 2 years into his NFL career now. But you look at this class that they signed, and you'll see everybody's going to get to see some of these guys on Saturday. We're talking about Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden. Obviously, Silas Bolden's not here yet. Who am I forgetting? Yeah, you'll see Kendrick Blackshear at linebacker, Trey Moore. It's a higher quality of player, you know, because you've been able to build it up through recruiting. Now you really are using the portal for when Sark has talked publicly about the portal. You're using it for what he wanted it to be intended for, which was we're missing a piece or two here. We're going into the portal to get that specific piece, not going into the portal to build a team or just take guys for the sake of taking guys.
Yeah, for sure. And CB and Jake, I thought it was Mookie Taff that got shoved. Or, I mean, maybe they both got shoved.
No, it was a go for Ovi did get shoved. Okay. Rex, I'm assuming I didn't hang around. I don't want to smell anything. Or
yeah, you think Jeff is going to be like.
I did not. There was no time to examine, play scientist. I beelined it for that freaking tunnel, man. I was out of there. I was done.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what, like. Did all the stories I heard about Ajay Hall before it was even a done deal for him going to Texas, like that dude, man. So whenever we hear that he got a boot off of his car with his own two hands, and there's a video of it, we believed it. Dude, Ajay is just one of those. He's just one of those people. So, do we know what he's doing nowadays? Is he in a JUCO or anything?
I don't know, man. One of my buddies was a Jai Hall's high school coach, and at last check, he hadn't heard from Ajay of late. But you know, it's funny the way my buddy talked about how you had to handle Ajay and the challenges of dealing with his personality. Verbatim. Was the exact same thing Sark told me at coaching school about dealing with Ajay Hall. And I'm like, I don't think this is going to work out for the long term, but we'll see, you know, and it didn't work out. But Jordan, let's talk spring game, man.
Before we get into it, for the people watching, who are y'all most excited to see? Because I know, you know, Jeff and I have been at practices. We've seen a lot of the new transfers, the new freshmen. Like, what are y'all wanting to see in, like, any specific plays or play design or anything like that, or plays designed for freshmen or transfers, just because all we do is hear the opinions of people who are, you know, seeing and hearing these guys pretty much every day. So I am very curious to see, you know, what the large majority of the fan base is wanting to see. So sorry.
It's go ahead, Jeff. It's interesting too, because I was reading the Insider, and actually I'll use the Insider as a guide here, Chip's part yesterday. But I was editing that thing and getting it ready to publish, and you go through each position group, and it's like, this guy had a good spring, this guy had a good spring. Like, everyone's like, oh, man, you guys are sugarcoating everything. No, we've got to rely on what sources are telling us. And, like, very rarely, Jordan, you could attest this, very rarely are your practice sources going to tell you, oh, this dude had a bad practice. He was the drizzling you-know-whats today. They're going to point out the good and tell you all the good. Nobody's just going to willingly tell you the bad stuff that happened, or so-and-so had a bad, unless it's just painfully obvious, like, I don't think this dude's long for this program kind of thing. But yeah, you're not going to hear much of the bad stuff. So yeah, so I'll use the Insider as kind of a guideline to this. And this is really, really good. You know, if you want a primer for the spring game, go to Hornets 24/7. It's the first story you'll see. It's part one of the Insider from yesterday. Chip running down just kind of everything you need to know about the spring game. All right, Jordan, I want to go through this. I'm just going to identify one guy in each of these groups. Five players Texas fans should be thankful for their return. David Benda. We talked about him a little bit yesterday, but a dude that at this point in his career, I think we can agree David Benda probably doesn't have the highest upside as far as an NFL guy goes, but you need guys like that on your roster that are good, hardworking guys that the coaches know they can coach hard. They're culture guys, and it's just a good, steady hand on the field. Like, you're not counting on David Benda to make a bunch of just big old, excuse me, splash plays, but you trust David Benda to be out there and not have a bunch of screw-ups. Like, just a good, solid hand. So David Benda's one of those guys. Is he leveling out even more to where it's just, yeah, he's just good, solid piece.
Yeah, the way I tried to describe David Benda to someone the other day is like, not the perfect comp, but kind of the Jordan Whittington of the linebacker group this year, where he's kind of like,
no, that's a good comp. Don't sell yourself short. That's a good comparison. Yeah.
Well, I just meant like from the a leadership perspective, what he brings to the locker room is kind of the vet. Not necessarily like you said, don't think Benda has a ton of NFL drafts upside. Not that Whittington necessarily did, but like Whittington was a 5-star prospect at Aquero for a reason. You know what I mean? And injuries is what kind of got his career a little sidetracked from a draft perspective. Whereas Benda, even, you know, if he has an amazing season last year, it'll be pretty hard for him to get his name called next April. But, you know, he brings so much to that room. Just like Whittington did with kind of taking the guys under his wing. And now those are kind of the vets in the room, even though they're younger than the transfers.
Yeah.
So I see them trying to do the exact same thing where, you know, even though everyone knows Anthony Hill is already a bigger name than Benda and will be a much bigger name down the road, they know that Anthony Hill has to soak up all that game from someone. And it comes from David Benda. Another thing about Benda, sneaky big part of why Texas got Bo Barnes. They almost have nothing in common besides they both play linebacker, but they hit it off, and he was actually, you know, not that him and Bo Barnes were calling and chopping it up every day, but they stayed in touch, and each time Bo was on campus, they would have David go meet with him and his family. And you know, Bo loved David, but the main thing whenever I'd ask them about David was the parents would just rave about him. And I truly think, you know, Bo Barnes would end up at Texas regardless if David Benda existed or not.
Yeah.
But having David Benda is kind of the model of – or he's not the poster child of the program, but with what he does academically, doesn't have off-the-field issues, comes to work, busts his ass every day in practice, that is an example of what you would want your son to be like. And I think the Barnes family saw a lot of Bo and Benda, and it made them feel even more comfortable with Bo going to Texas. So
I think David Benda is a guy everybody respects. Cause man, it would have been real easy for that dude to portal out, you know?
Oh yeah.
You know, the coach you signed on to play for is gone. They're obviously recruiting over you at the position. It would have been really easy for him to move on, and he didn't. And I look at David Benda. To me, David Benda, I think a good comparison for David Benda, you mentioned Whittington, but I think one, like in terms of his future and how guys will see him, I think he's got a chance to have the same kind of impact on the program a guy like Chris Nelson had. Like when you talk to Malcolm Roach did have an NFL upside, is still in the league. Malcolm Roach will tell you, hey, man, Chris Nelson was the guy that showed him kind of, hey, here's how you work. Here's how you handle your business. Here's how you conduct yourself like a professional day in and day out. And Malcolm Roach passed that on to Tavondre Sweat and Coburn and Moro Ojimo and those guys, who passed it on to Byron Murphy, who've now passed it on to Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton. So you just kind of get this line of succession, and it starts somewhere. And in that defensive tackle room, it started with Chris Nelson. Just like that running back room, that culture of the running back room, it started with Roschon Johnson. And now it's going on down the line. And that leads me to Chip's second category, which are 5 spring football stars on offense. Man, as good as CJ Baxter is, I just have a feeling like we may get to a halfway point in the season and realize Jaden Blue's on a trajectory to have a similar season to what Jonathan Brooks had last year. I really feel like that about Jaden Blue, because – you know, my biggest knock on Jaden Blue last year was he just needed to learn some patience with the ball in his hand. Like, he's running up dudes' backs, and I'm like, man, if you just hold on for a sec, let that block develop, that 10-yard run is going to turn into a 50-yard run. And by the end of the year, we started to see some of that. You look at his receiving skills out of the backfield. And that ball he caught on that last drive in the Sugar Bowl. Again, if Texas wins that game, we're talking about the Whittington catch, and we're talking about that over-the-shoulder catch that Jaden Blue had. So Jaden Blue's a guy that I want to see his continued evolution. And again, you talk about a guy that we assumed he was going into the portal at some point, and a guy that it would have been very easy for him to move on. Now he's got a chance to be the guy in that running back room. With all due respect to CJ Baxter and everybody else, Jaden Blue could end up being the guy.
Yeah, no. And that's obviously what he wants. And I've actually kind of, you know, throughout his tenure in Austin, I know some of his people in his circle. Look, I'll tell you now, he does not want to come back to Texas after this season. He wants to leave and get drafted.
No, as a matter of fact, in the Insider, Chip even wrote this because I guess he said it. He said he's approaching this season. It's a contract year. Quote, we'll see how this year goes, but the plan is for me to be gone after this season. So he's made no bones about it publicly. Like he wants this to be the year.
Yeah. So that being said, you know, I'm very excited to see what he brings. A lot of what you said about him with kind of, I wouldn't say the slow start, but, you know, it took him a while to really get going last year. And I think a big part of that can just be attributed to experience. And him just being a young cat that just wants to make the big play. So now that he kind of has a year under his belt of real experience, I think he's got some confidence knowing that, you know, him and Baxter are 1-2 punch. He's not the third guy behind the 1-2 punch of Baxter and Brooks. So
he's not fourth banana behind Roshan Bijan and Jonathan Brooks.
Exactly. So yeah.
You ready for your next category, Jordan, as we move on?
Let's hear it.
Five spring football stars on defense. I keep going back to this guy, and I'm glad he's had a productive spring, because the Jhené Barron playing corner stuff sounds great, right? That sounds awesome. It only works if Jalen Gilbo can fill in at that star position and give you starting caliber reps, because Gilbo at the star, it creates the least amount of stress on the rest of your defense. You don't have to think, okay, if we play Jhené at corner, do we have to move Makuba to star? And then we got to bring in somebody else at safety. So now we don't have our best grouping on the field. If Jalen Gilbo can handle the star position, you can play Jhené at cornerback when you want and still have your best 11 on the field, definitely your best defensive back group on the field.
Oh yeah. And yeah, that's really who I'd say I'm probably most intrigued to see the spring game out of anyone in the secondary, is Jalen Gilbo. Cause like you said, mm-hmm. like he is the X factor.
Yeah.
For the Texas secondary this season and for Jhené Barron's hopeful draft grade, in April. So yeah, he's going to be important. I can't wait to see Warren Roberson, man, just because I was such a big Warren Roberson fan. I tried to tell everyone, like, look, I know he's not the highest rated 4-star or is a high 3-star, whatnot, but like this is the type of kid Texas needs. So yeah, and same with Jelani McDonald too. Like, man, I still think, not that the switch hasn't necessarily flipped, but I don't think he's fully put it together yet, and I don't even know if that'll come until he's actually a starter. I just think the type of prospect he is / was, he needs experience more than anything. And experience builds confidence. He already has a lot of that. But it's about, you know, being experienced in the SEC is a lot different than being unexperienced. So just need him to get his feet wet and to rotate in, which he will a lot this year. And I mean, 6'3 was the Waco Tribune Basketball Player of the Year as a junior at Connolly. Like, so much to love about him as an athlete. I'm excited to see him too.
Next category, five returnees who need to make a push. I don't think it's close, man. He's Chip's number two guy, but Sadir Mitchell, I think a lot of eyeballs are going to be on Sadir Mitchell tomorrow, just to see what he looks like. How does he move? Especially if he's going head up against Jake Majors, can he win some battles at the point of attack? Because you can't rely on the portal every year for defensive tackles. At some point, you've got to get your high school recruiting right. You've got to hit on some of these guys. And, you know, we already know, like, you already lost DeAndre Robinson, one of your 24 signees, your 22 defensive tackle class. It is what it is at this point. And Mitchell was the only guy you took in 23. So if you want a good young defensive tackle that you can count on for the next few years, Sidir Mitchell's the best candidate. And, you know, at least according to our reporting, I mean, he understood that Kenny Baker wasn't real happy with him, you know, showing up to winter conditioning the way he did and how he started. You were down there watching D-line that first
practice. I was quite literally, like, I could reach and touch Sidir Mitchell. Yeah. I was so close to him when Kenny Baker was just ripping his ass before he made him run a lap that first practice.
Yeah, it was not
like, a good I was literally right next to him. And I have photos. They're on Kenny Baker's 24/7 profile of him cussing out. Because I'm like, this is a great photo op. He's looking directly at me.
Yeah.
And is facing towards me and is talking. So yeah, I was right next to them when that whole thing happened. So interested to see how he's going to turn that into some motivation.
Yeah, five newcomers who will have an impact in 2024. CB said he wanted to see Isaiah Bond. That's one of the guys Chip talked about. For me, it's Trey Moore. You know, I know we won't see a ton tomorrow. You know, anybody gets within an arm's reach of the quarterback, maybe two arm lengths from the quarterback, the whistle's going to get blown, the play will be dead. But I want to see, you know, if Trey Moore is going against Cam Williams or Kelvin Banks or whoever, I just want to see Trey Moore work a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't want to say Trey Moore had a great spring or anything, but it was more just kind of a quiet spring, I think, for Trey Moore.
Yeah. I got to see him versus Kelvin, because Kelvin Banks would have been the best tackle he faced last year, and he's had to face him every day in practice since he got to Texas in January. So interested to see how that's kind of progressed as a game, maybe sped it up a little. One guy I'm really curious to see, or not necessarily guy, but guys, how the rotations work with the linebackers and Anthony Hill, and specifically Leonga LaFau, like where he's lining up, how, like, because, you know, with the spring game, they're not trying to show a ton for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can pick some things up by just seeing kind of the order of what guys are subbing in and counting snaps and different things like that. But Leonga LaFau, I've always loved Leonga as a prospect, as a person, as a player too. And I wouldn't say he's been forgotten about, but, like, he's one of the most quiet kids on the team, not super active on social media. And I just think some people have kind of forgotten about him.
I'm telling you, though, man, when, you know, you see some assistant coaches kind of light up when they talk about guys, man, the way Jeff Choate lit up when he was talking about Leonga LaFau, like, you could tell that's the only hesitation Jeff Choate had about taking that Nevada job. Is like, man, I recruited these guys. He and Anthony Hill would have been a perfect linebacker tandem, and he's not really going to get to coach them when they're playing their best football at Texas. So I'm holding out hope for LaFau, man. I think he's going to be a hell of a player, and a guy that really can be that kind of C-gap to C-gap control guy in the middle, and you can really just cut Anthony Hill loose at that point.
Yeah, I know he did have mullet. I'm not sure what his current hairstyle is right now, CB, but yeah. And I think he's still wearing 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Got it. But yeah. And I mean, with Samaje gone, the linebacker room, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Blackshire, Benda, Ant Hill, Darian Gallette, Leonga.
Don't forget about Mo Blackwell.
My dog, Ty Anthony Smith. From the 409.
I still need to get a Mo Blackwell jersey. As a matter of fact, can I get like the Mo Blackwell jersey, just like a Texas shirt with Mo Blackwell's name and number on it? Put a little NIL money in, you know, I don't know what percentage of that $24.99 goes in Mo Blackwell's pocket, but maybe he can enjoy a Starbucks on me if I buy one of his shirts.
Man, I'll tell you what. I can't wait till Ty Anthony Smith, like, becomes a starter/major contributor and they let him talk to the media. He's going to say some awesome shit. He always said some awesome shit. He's this classic 409 kid. Like, what's going through his head, he's going to say it. So, yeah. What do the players do after spring
game? Hold on, Jose. Hold on that one point, because there's just one more category that I want to get to. Early enrollees that you're ready to see have an impact. I think Jake, I think, mentioned Xavier Filsimi. He's definitely one. You, Jordan, you brought up Ty Anthony Smith. I think all five of these guys, Chip mentioned Alex January, who might have already passed Sadir Mitchell in the pecking order. I think Colin Simmons is a given. I'm telling you, man, Ryan Wingo, I don't know if it's just because he wears the number five like Andre Johnson did at Miami, but when I see Ryan Wingo, I see Andre Johnson. That's who I see when I watch Ryan Wingo. So that's who I see. That's my comp for my lazy comp for Ryan Wingo.
Okay.
We'll see. So Jose,
and I guess before we get to Jose, just because this one's first, he went through all of the spring practices at 100%, right? Okay. Yeah. Just double checking.
Was limited during the fall, but yeah, he's been full go during the spring. So, Jose, what do the players do after the spring game? Do they get extended break from football until summer work? So, they'll have exit meetings next week. They'll pretty much go into kind of a, for lack of a better term, like a modified off-season program, where they'll have stuff where they'll have to lift and, you know, do certain things, check in with the medical staff. Some guys will need to get treatment and whatnot. They'll get some time off, you know, whenever finals are. They'll get like a week or two off. They'll get to go home, and then they'll come back for summer workouts. So yeah, it'll be their workouts on campus will be, like I said, kind of a modified off season type deal. But yeah, they'll get some time to recover, let their bodies get back in line for summer conditioning.
Yeah, and also a lot of proms are this weekend or next weekend or the weekend prior. So you're gonna see some of the freshman early enrollees go home for the weekend too, potentially after the spring game.
Yeah. Oh, so, losers, college kids going to prom? Gross.
Hey, BK, you pulled that, didn't you?
No, I wish. No? I didn't get invited. I would have gone if I did.
Look at you, Wooderson.
I'd go right now. I wouldn't go right now. That's too weird. I'd go to a sorority formal in college, but I wouldn't go to a high school
BK's,
prom
right BK now. Shows up with like the Lloyd Christmas tux from Dumb and Dumber and like a thing of MD 2020. It's like, what's up, fools?
Yeah. What are we getting into tonight, huh?
BK go showing up like Austin High's prom or something.
Could you imagine? I mean, I'd be arrested probably. So I don't know if that's a good idea for any of us. But what a bit that would be.
Yeah. Jeff, why aren't you on Texas Sports Unfiltered anymore? Well, BK ran into an unfortunate incident, a local prom.
Jeez. Sam, by the way, I've talked to several NFL agents since the whole DY incident. Like, I'm telling you right now, I don't think there's any possible way Sweat goes before the third round. Like, he's been removed completely from like a third of the NFL's draft boards. So I mean, that's what happens when you have the notion that you're a partier, and then 3 weeks before the biggest day of your life, you get a DY. So
yeah. I think there if he does go in the late third, I think it'll be somebody trading up because they don't feel like where they are in the fourth round is going to fall there. So it'll be somebody that just feels like the value is too good to pass up, and they'll send like a five next year or something to go up there to get him.
It's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy. Yeah, I saw Field Yates's latest big board. I think he released it yesterday, so a week away from the draft. And he had Tavondre Sweat outside of the top 100. He actually had Christian Jones ranked ahead of T. Sweat on his big board, man, right now.
You know what? I wouldn't be shocked if Christian Jones went in this draft before Tavondre Sweat.
Might happen.
There's a lot. I mean, you talk about Jordan. You're shaking your head, but
no, I'm shaking. I wouldn't be surprised
either. Yeah. Is it just the dismay that that's what we're talking about at this point, that Christian Jones may go before Tavondre Sweat? Because everything that's been said about Tavondre Sweat, it's almost like people across the league are saying the exact opposite about Christian Jones. Like, man, this dude's got his stuff together. Great student. Nobody has a bad thing to say about him in the locker room. Really improved. Still young, but he's got a lot of college experience. So, I mean, is he a guard at the next level? Is he a right tackle? I don't know, but he's really intriguing, I think, for a lot of teams at this point. Because, BK, you know this. You were in the Houston market, and you got close to some people in that Texans organization. offensive tackles are almost like quarterbacks, where you're willing to reach on a guy if you think there's a chance he could be a guy, just because those guys are so hard to find.
Yep, they're so hard to find, and they're so incredibly important too. So, yeah, I mean, Christian Jones, I know his last game kind of left a sour taste in Texas fans' mouths because he did not fare too well against Braylon Trice in that Washington defensive front. But I mean, that guy got so much better over his Texas career and really put it all together this past season. So he's earned it, and he had a good pre-draft process too. So obviously we're all rooting for him, but I think if he does go in round three, it'll be warranted. He did enough for me to be in that conversation right now.
Man, if I'm Kyle Flood, that's the guy I sell in terms of player development, because it's like, dude, this guy, if
watch these clips of Herb Hand coaching him and see what he did pre-Flood.
Just calls him Herb Hand.
Herb and. Leave out Herb both Hand. H's. Yeah, Herb Hand.
You know, Kyle Flood could be like, look, this guy was a top 100 pick or thereabouts, and when I got here, dude couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time. And now he's a top NFL draft pick.
I don't know if I can do that right now, but I got to get with Kyle Flood, I guess, to work on that.
Some days I wonder. Yeah. You know, BK, I remember, I'll go ahead and say it now because it doesn't matter. There was a reporter in the 24/7 Sports Network covering Auburn at the time that when Herb Hand got the Texas job, I called him and be like, so, man, what's Texas getting with Herb Hand? And more often than not, like, you're going to give people maybe not quite the sugar-coated version, but maybe you'll leave out some of the bad parts. And the first thing he said to me was, good luck with that. I'm Jeez. Like, huh? He's like, oh, it'll be good at first. He's like, but at some point, he's like, and Herb Hand's a great guy. It's like, but at some point you'll realize, man, his offensive lines give up a lot of sacks and they don't really get better. And it's pretty much exactly like what we saw from the Texas offensive line.
They don't really get better, and because he sucks at recruiting and the team sucks, all of the takes are undersized and aren't even talented enough to play in the Big 12, but they're going to get thrown out there with three or four of them as true freshmen. And then,
Jake Majors and Hayden Connor are the last two. Well, I guess Max Merrill would be, but I don't, with all due respect to Max, he's – I don't know if it counts, but Jake Majors and Hayden Connor are the last two Herb Hand guys.
Wow. And they needed Kyle Flood to figure out how to play football. It seems like
Jake Majors is another dude that's gotten better.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hayden Connor. I honestly, watching him in high school, I didn't think Hayden Connor would start a game at Texas.
Wow.
And he's a 3-year starter now. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. He could, Neto could push him out of a job this year at some point, but He's started three more seasons than I thought he would start.
Yeah. It's always kind of been for me with Majors, who's going to replace Majors? Nobody ever has. I mean, he's still there.
That's what it used to be. It used to be like, okay, why don't we have somebody better than him? Like, can we get somebody in here better than him? And then like, it's like, oh shit. No, like this guy's good.
Yeah.
We're good with him. Can he stay for another 3 or 4 more years, please?
Jake Bayless is not going to let this go. We've talked about this like 3 times this week.
It's a great story. So,
I mean, it is.
You let go.
Sometimes, look, allegedly, I want to stress allegedly. Sometimes, man, when you got to pinch a loaf, you got
to. Got to go.
Yeah. And I can't look, I've never been a coach, I've never been on a recruiting visit. Number one, I'm terrified of public deucing.
Me too. I'm in that group with you, BK.
But it's like, I feel like in that spot, I'm telling them I got to leave. Like, I'll be right back. I got the boat. You just say it like, my stomach's acting up. I had something for lunch. You don't blame it on mama's cooking for dinner. I had something for lunch. I don't want to do this to y'all's place. I'll be back in like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you can't clog a toilet at their house. Like, that's... You've got a better chance to keep the recruit if you go somewhere, do your business, then come back. Forget even clogging it. Like, if you just stink it up to where after you leave, it still smells like ass, then that's going to leave such a sour taste that if I'm a recruit with dozens of offers, I'm out. Sorry, you can't do that in my house.
You do what I did during the 2014 NCAA baseball tournament. You don't torture people in the press box at Reckling Park. You go down the street to the Wendy's and just obliterate the porcelain there.
There it is.
Oh yeah.
I wouldn't have taken either one of you guys to be shy to have to take a shit.
I did, BK. I've never had to go that bad. And like I went to a convenience store. Granted, it's like 1 a.m. and I'm in that part of Houston over by Rice. There's a convenience store. I get out of it. It's like something out of a sitcom, like the bathroom's got a big out of order sign on it. Yeah. I'm like, dude, this is it. I need to just plan on throwing these pants away or whatever. And I see a Wendy's, dude, and I'm like raining sweat by the time I get in that Wendy's and just went in. And man, they honestly, it was so bad. They probably could have put me on the terrorist watch list for what I did in there.
But that's how you're supposed to do it. Like every time I share a hotel with someone at 24/7 and one of us has got to go too. Go to the fucking lobby.
Go to the lobby. Like, yep. That's simple math. That's what I do. That's what I do with when I like my wife and I go out of town. I'm not going to do that to our bathroom where I'm going to sleep. I don't want to just marinate in my own grunt. I'm going out to the lobby.
Yeah, because some of these hotels nowadays don't even have real doors. They got the sliding door.
What are we doing? What are we doing with that? Why is that a thing? Give me a door, please.
Well, and that's the whole thing. I always like to go in and check and see if they have a fan. You know, they have all the switches, and it's like click, click, click. All these lights are coming on, you know, mirror lights and all that. And then you hit that one, and there's the fan. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not too bad. That's not too bad.
You know, like, especially like my wife and I went, this was a couple Christmases ago. We went to Colorado for a Christmas vacation. We stayed in an Embassy Suites. And I'm not going to argue. I'm willing to go to the lobby because that's a very nice bathroom down there. And like the stalls were spacious. Like I can kick out and kick my legs out. Like I'm almost want to like take a computer down there and just hang out.
This is wild. Could you imagine taking the biggest dumper snapper of your life on an airplane that's flying overseas?
Jake, you're a flawed guy. You're a flawed guy. If you're gonna,
that's where we draw the line. No airplane shitting.
Shitting on a plane. I've never done that. I've shit everywhere, even in yards. But never on a plane. Never on a plane. This fat ass would not stay through turbulence on that toilet.
No mud snakes on the plane. That's what we're aiming for. Like can't have that.
I don't even know what to say.
You ever been on one of those tour? You've ever been like a tour bus, BK, like one of those charter buses where somebody will forget the rule and they'll go number two in the bus bathroom and then it circulates through the event. You didn't do that on your trip to El Paso, did you?
No. That terrifies me. Like calling myself a germaphobe, I feel like would be disrespectful to germaphobes, and there are folks who take that very seriously. But I am.
Yeah, Kevin Dunn's a germaphobe.
I'm pretty clean, and I don't like germs a whole heck of a lot. So I try to avoid all public bathrooms, but definitely the airplane/charter bus bathroom. Ain't no telling when those have been cleaned. Like I know the hotel bathroom, like those are getting cleaned.
Yeah,
and even restaurant bathrooms are getting cleaned, like not to my liking, but whatever. But the airplane or the charter bus, I have no idea how often anyone's going in there and fixing that up.
Have any of y'all covered a game at AT&T Stadium with the Cowboys?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Yeah. You know how there's that bathroom in the press box and only's got two stalls?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, during the state games that are 4 days in a row where they're giving out free vouchers at the concession stand.
Man, I don't even want to imagine.
Sloppy Joes, nachos, hot dogs. Dog, it is a war zone in that bathroom. I don't even go in there past Rico's like the second cheese. Day. I'm walking because if you pro tip, by the way, for any of y'all that are ever in the AT&T Stadium press box. You walk out the press box doors and turn right and go through those double doors. There's another bathroom that like no one knows about that's slightly down the hallway to the left. And that's where I always go to, you know, handle business after the first, second day. Cause after the first, second day, it turns into D-Day in there. It's just horrible.
A shit show.
Yeah.
So you guys ever had the friend that invites you to go camping with them, you know, in their little trailer, whatever, motor home, not the full motor home thing, but where you have to, when you take a piss, you have to step on the thing on the side and it opens up and it flushes.
Yeah.
You take a shit in one of those. It's like, whoa, look out. you're sitting there trying to scrub that thing up and, yeah, and hoping that it's not going to get stuck in that hose, making its way out into the thing.
I don't remember if you were there or not, BK, for the snowpocalypse. At the Horn Studios.
Oh yeah, yeah. I spent like five nights there.
I messed with Snoop because I'm like, dude, were you guys? Because I heard the bathrooms there were just, I mean, uninhabitable. And I asked Snoop, I'm like, dude, were you guys just like pancake stacking it? Because the plumbing to the building like froze up, so I'm like, it's just pancake stacking.
Well, there was there were four floors in that building, and each floor had a men's and women's bathroom, so. And there were multiple stalls. So there wasn't a ton of stacking going on. We were able to separate out enough because I think it was literally only our building or our office that had anybody actually staying there.
Yeah.
So I think for the most part, we had our own sort of private bathrooms. But yeah, by the end of that 4 or 5 day run, it was pretty nasty. And the whole building smelled like it.
My time at the Horn was like, this is the only time I've been like in an office building setting. And I'll go ahead and throw him under the bus, dude. Like, Bob Cole had the worst bathroom habits. I tell Craig, like, hey, I got to go, you know, go number one real quick. And I'm in there, and, like, Bob Cole's trying to talk to me while he's in there, you know, pushing one out. And I'm like, Bob, we can have this conversation, you know, in an hour or so. I don't need you grunting while you're trying to talk to me. I just want to get in and out of here. So.
And you knew it was him because it smelled like shit and cool water. So it's like, oh, my God. And the boots.
Yeah. You hear the boots stomping, Rodney. Like, it's just worked. I'm just trying to work it down. You know. Yeah. Stu says it perfectly. Nothing like the grunt during a convo. Like, I don't need to hear that. I don't want to hear that. But no. I like that we can talk about poops capades during crosstalk. It's fun.
That's what we do.
I enjoy it. Great deal. Yep. Jordan's bored as hell, but.
Hey, he's contributed to this conversation plenty. We all have good shit stories. No doubt.
I'm not gonna lie, kind of upset. I have to go from like the side hustle job where I get paid to talk about shitting back to like the real world where I gotta write a story after this. So
hey, write about this. This is good stuff right here. Yeah.
Well, BK's morning co-host, what he did 1 year at Texas OU was, I forgot what I think housekeeping walked in his room where the room wasn't ready when he was told it would be. So when housekeeping went in after he checked out, there was a deuce propped up against the back of the toilet like a brown rag doll. left it laying there.
God.
Yeah. Your co-host did that, BK. Yeah. He did that.
Yeah, that's
and let's not forget about Bucky's baked potato adventure.
No. So, We would all like to forget about it, but
no, it's the worst thing I've ever heard done to somebody, but it's the funniest thing I've ever heard done to somebody too.
I don't know if Jordan's heard that story. So at some point we got to get Bucky and Jordan on TSU at the same time. So Jordan can be filled in on what we're talking about here. Cause it is stuff of legend, but you also might need a trash can next to you, Jordan, cause you might throw up from how nasty it is.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys transition from scat to the spring game and we'll get out of here.
Very good, gentlemen. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the weekend.
See you Monday.
Yes, sirs. Thank you.